plan as to how you set up your target and what is it that you're seeking to achieve and how we are going to achieve it. We know that it can never be enough. The budget that has been apportioned is not enough, and nonetheless, we must stretch it such that it covers all the areas that we seek to cover, with the hope that maybe some more could be coming along the way. But I know that for each and every department, what has been allocated is really not enough because of the financial constraints that we have in the country in general. Deputy Minister, let me welcome you to this arrangement. We expected to be graced by the presence of the Minister of the Department. Nonetheless, we did get a message that she did herself up in the Cabinet Committee to get with other ministers that are involved in the Cabinet Committee for this morning. So I hope the committee will accept that, especially because at least we do have a deputy minister. It becomes problematic if none of the two is present. Let me take this opportunity then to report the other appointees. The one of the minister is being noted. I don't know if the other appointees were reported in the meeting that we had prior to your coming, and we have already had an engagement with human settlements. And from our side, we did report appointees. They did applicable within the system. Without wasting time, Deputy Minister, I hope you know the members of the Senate group. You don't meet us that often, because we meet only once, maybe near contact with the Department of Health, or whenever there is something special that you want to engage on. But nonetheless, I'll allow my members to introduce themselves. I'm Mrs. Zwane, the chairperson of education, acting in the place of Honorable Dlamini, who is on sick leave. Can you please introduce yourself?
Good morning, I'm Thembo Samka, from representing the Eastern Cape. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, Chris Houghton, from the Northwest, member of the NCOP.
Sanbonani, Minabut and Sila Wangwanya, representing the province of Gauteng, and member of the NCOP, and also a member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable members of the Select Committee. Thank you very much for inviting us to come and present to you our strategic plan for the budget for 2017-2018. Let me on the outset, although you have already acknowledged the apology, already is as we speak at the cabinet committee where we are presenting the cabinet memo on the national health insurance. So he has to be there to present the cabinet memo, which will take us forward in terms of the implementation of national health insurance. As members will be aware that we published a white paper in December of 2015 and invited comments from stakeholders from the public. Those comments were received over a period of about 4 months, and then once they were received, we started the process now of looking at those submissions and set up a number of teams to actually work through the various areas of including the public submissions, but also in terms of the implementation plans. So that work has been done, and so the revised white paper with having processed the inputs and also now looking at implementation plan has now been presented to cabinet. So that once approved by cabinet, then we can proceed with the process of legislation. So that's why the Honourable Minister is there at the cabinet committee. Also the apology of the DG, Precious Matoso. She had hoped to be here, but she, with the change of season, I think she got quite a serious viral infection over the last few days. So she, until yesterday, she thought she might recover, but I was told late last night that she's not doing well. So she had to go and see a doctor today. Otherwise, she would have been here and meeting the team here. Now, as we, I'll be in a short while handing over to the team to make the full presentation. Just to say to honourable members that as we present this strategic plan and budget for which this comes on the heels of a very successful previous financial year where in the main, in terms of, as it will be indicated, indicators for health are very promising. We are not yet obviously there. There's still a lot of challenges. But if you look across the board, and I'm sure members would have also seen the release of the stats by the Stats SA over the last week, which also would show that indicators like life expectancy fairly doing well in terms of improvement in that regard. The figures will be presented to you. Even in terms of other indicators, infant mortality, child mortality, all those reducing, which means that there's improvement. We have got areas like maternal mortality where we may not be doing, you know, as well as we would have liked to. But at least what is encouraging is the fact that the trend of improvement in the indicators. But a lot of those are not, many of them are not totally dependent. Just in terms of further movement, as we ourselves acknowledge that a major leap forward from an average of 52-53 years in terms of life expectancy to where we are, 62-63, almost a 10-year gain, largely because of the intervention in the area of antiretroviral treatment, which has made more people live longer. Intervention in terms of treatment of tuberculosis, for instance, area of immunization on the children as well, all those interventions. But we want to, especially this being a select committee broader than just health on social services, to also just to say to ourselves that we would not be realistic in expecting further sudden jumps in some of these indicators, because biomedical kind of health treatments can only take you up to a certain level in terms of further improvement of quality of life. It is the social determinants, improvement in housing, water, just overall environment. her mental health, access to good quality nutrition, all those things, you know, are quite key in terms of further improvement. So we do appreciate the progress we have made, but we're also conscious of the fact that for to move the country to the NDP target of 70 years average by 2030 is going to require much more than just medical intervention, but overall social improvement in terms of employment and so on. Specifically on our side, we still remain, as much as I'm saying, we've made a lot of progress, but we still remain with a number of challenges, as will be reflected in the detailed presentation. One, as the chair has mentioned, which is an overall challenge to all of us, is the shrinking fiscus. So over the last financial year, a number of times we have been instructed to reduce, especially on personnel spending. So there have been various instructions where we had to cut spending. Now that has various serious implications on the health side in as well. Health is a very, you know, human resource intense service. You know, health, similar as in education, health professionals are very key. So, but we do understand because of the shrinking fiscus why that those instructions. But also just to mention that a number of our key institutions with this reduction in allocations, because when there is a reduction in allocation, you can only reduce even in terms of compensation. You can only reduce in terms of adding additional people and prioritizing. I know that there's been a lot of controversies about whether we have cut down on hiring nurses and doctors. And we have been very careful in terms of that area to say that when there is such an instruction to reduce compensation, we must look at the management and administrative side rather than, you know, the professional side. But there's a limit because when people are already in the system, even if you have more administrators in the system, you can't just get rid of them. There must be a process. So what then that has resulted with a general reduction in allocations is that it puts a lot of stress. Members will be aware, some of these have been in the public domain, where a number of our provinces are quite stressed in terms of you know, infrastructure, in terms of maintenance of equipment, being able to buy new equipment. I mean, just to give you an example, I was talking to the CEO of Steve Biko, which is one of our central keys, you know, central hospitals in Swansea, and he was indicating the stress level in terms of their ability now to maintain equipment and also to buy new equipment to replace old equipment which are now aging, because the compensation costs have gone so high that they've eaten into the area of where they can maintain equipment and replace equipment. So that's the, some of the things which you need to just highlight. Also, we work with our provinces in terms of improving just human resource management, financial management. We try by all means to make sure that there's improvement, although you still find that a number of our provinces are unable to get an unqualified body. But we are working with them in that regard. Improving on procurement, also making sure that all the commodities can be procured, especially the essential ones. But also, lastly, just on the area of infrastructure, to make sure that our infrastructure does not deteriorate. So those are just as highlights in terms of the kind of areas which we are dealing with. I will now hand over to, as I said, the DGs are able to be here, but we do have Mr. Dave Andrews, who's leading the team, who's the chief of operations in the department. So she will introduce the rest of the team and immediately go on and give us the presentation. Maybe you can guide us, Chair. I saw that we are here, Team 1, but give us a sense of, so that you know how to manage, what time do you want to go into discussion so that they can manage and give out and just highlight the key points.
No, thank you, Deputy Minister. I think we can go up to 12 with the presentation and then have a question, I mean time set aside for engagement between 12 o'clock and quarter to 2:00.
If they can
No, thank you.
Programs, which is doing 1.5 inches of vaccine. We've also increased the number of people initiated on antiretroviral therapy, and ART has increased nearly threefold in the past 5 years, from 1 million in 2011 to 3.5 million in 2016. Our TB success rate has also greatly increased from 54% in 2009 to 84% in 2016. In the next slide, I just have a table indicating the main demographic indicators related to life expectancy and organ mortality, and comparing where we were at the baseline. So for life expectancy at birth, we were 56 years in 2009. Overall, we are now at 63 years, and therefore very close to meeting our 2019 target of 65 years. Life expectancy for women remain higher at 65 years versus 60 years for men. And then in terms of the under 5 mortality rate, we had in 2009 we had mortality, under 5 mortality of 56, and it is now at 57, close to our target of 53 under 5 in 2009. Our neonatal mortality rate, as the minister pointed out, has not seen as big an improvement. We have a baseline of 14-year-old natural death, and we are now at 11. But this is because this is a quantitative comparison to the impact on it. Infant mortality rate has also declined, as has our maternal mortality ratio. Now I'd just like to go through all our budget program areas. The first program relates to administration, the purpose of which in the department is really to support services to the National Department of Health, which is human resources development and management, labor relations services, information communication technology services, property management services, security services, legal services, supply chain management, and financial management services. In this program, honourable members, we don't have any new indicators, and all the indicators we are really built upon the indicators that were in our previous ATP of the previous 2 years. They include, among other, achieving an unqualified audit again of target for 2018 to ensure financial accountability, as well as having 5 provinces, provincial departments of health, that demonstrate improvement in audit outcomes for women. With regards to human resource services, we have increased our target to 35%, which is 1,504 employees accessing our health and wellness programs. In terms of improving our business continuity in the department, our 2017-18 target is self-assessment as per the ISO, which is an international standard conducted. ISO 22300 conducted, and short-term corrective action plan implemented, and then all the other targets, like I said, improving communication interventions for the target aspects, improving our vacancy rates for maintaining what we have had before, and then the number of management that This year we're looking to establish and develop a surveillance system to monitor implementation of the strategy. The next slide, again, we have some legislative indicator here, which aims at having the amendments to the Traditional Practitioners Act drafted by the end of 2017-18. And then we, in order to strengthen revenue collection, trying to provide hospitals to maximize revenue retention, we have last year commenced the process of developing a discussion paper for revenue retention. And this year we will finalize that paper and present it to the health sector team by 10 January. The next strategic objective is really to implement the EL strategy of South Africa through the development of the system designed for patient information systems. Here we have two indicators, and our targets here are for this year to have an integrated system architecture for the National Integrated Patient-Based Information System developed, and then to have 2,450 primary health care facilities implementing the web-based outpatient registration system, then building on the work of previous 2 years. The other objectives are also, the other indicators are also indicators which we've come a long way with, not new indicators. And the first two relate to our national research strategic plan and to move with the implementation thereof. For this year, we are planning to do a priority research study whereby we monitor the trends in health research. And that is again the indicator of national health research plan implemented. The second indicator and target relates to the South African Advanced Health Survey was conducted. It is one of the key elements in our national research plan. We provide the information on the planning. For this year, our target is to release our key indicators report. The statistician general has already handed over to the minister, but we still need to have our own stakeholder consultation meeting to unpack the report and explain it to our stakeholders. The next strategic objective relates to developing and implementing an integrated monitoring and evaluation plan in the health sector, which is aligned to the health sector strategy. And for this year, our key target is to conduct a full evaluation of phase one of MHI. It has been commenced this year with phase two of MHI implementation. Then the next set of objectives are relating to international relations, and indicators and targets relate to the implementation of international treaties and frameworks, bilateral and multilateral frameworks and projects that need to be implemented. In terms of again, ensuring the affordability and access of medicines, we have a single exit price adjustment indicator whereby we publish annually single exit price adjustments. Our target for this year is to have the annual price adjustment submitted and published to public comment. The central repository for the funded of for funded and unfunded patients. Our target for this year is an electronic interface piloted at two central hospitals to facilitate the exchange of records. With regard to the national electronic system to monitor supplier performance, our target for this year is to have four quarterly performance reports of overall contract quality for suppliers. And then regarding a presentation of a multi-stakeholder forum on medicine availability, our having a detailed target setting process which we have done and the proper monitoring of those after achievement of those targets because of that collaboration with the provinces so that we are still able to report on the limited program of action as well as our commitments remain in place. So many of the indicators which have remained are those for which we as national departments are directly responsible and which underscores our monitoring, our policy making and function as well as our monitoring function of the implementation of those functions and our role in ensuring that we achieve our impact and good outcomes for the population. So with regards to reducing maternal and neonatal morbidity and mortality, we will continue as in the past to produce four national quarterly reports with recommendations to the provinces to improve with regards to elimination of mother-to-child transmission. We will develop a remedial plan and monitor these in all districts that still have a maternal mother-to-child transmission rate of greater than 1.5%. So that will be our focus. We will continue our work on cervical and breast cancer through guidelines for cervical cancer through training to the provinces and supporting them to develop implementation plans for the policies we developed last year for cervical cancer as well as for breast cancer to ensure proper implementation thereof. With regards to the under five, including under five child health and increasing the mortality rate for age groups, for 2017-18, we will continue as in the past to produce a national quarterly monitoring dashboard report, which we then present back to the provinces and with recommendations that we can give. With regards to severe acute malnutrition, this year we will be focusing on Eastern Cape and the Northwest, so that they all have remedial plans in place. All provinces will then have remedial plans in place to reduce severe acute malnutrition. Our maternal, newborn, child, adolescent, and women's health and nutrition strategy is a new indicator, and our aim is to have this strategy approved. Similarly, we have now a road to health booklet which we're revising, and the aim is to have the revised booklet distributed to all the procedures as possible.
sorry to do that. I would suggest that we move a bit faster, moving that aside. We've got 6 programs in all, and we still have to do one. So if you could just give us some
okay. With regards to the program 4, Honorable Chief, here we have no new indicators. It is all the indicators on this slide that have always been in the ACP, and it's aimed at improving the district health system through improving our district management structures, building on our previous targets, increasing the functionality of our committees and primary our care facilities, maintaining our and having a target of 2,000 functional ward-based outreach teams, and ensuring that the number of primary our care facilities in the district increasing the number that qualify as independent, and with a job target to the some of the primary our care facilities. The others are also old targets. Target for this year with regards to primary our care and disabilities is to have 55 schools of facilities accessible to people with disabilities. We're moving also, this is our only new indicator, and this is to also move towards having ideal hospitals, and our target is to have an ideal hospital framework drafted. Then the other indicators are all indicators focusing on improving environmental health services. Our indicators are still there, it's just increasing in building on the work of the previous year. The next target relates to international health regulations and port health services, and we are trying to strengthen our port entries with a target of 10 commercial points of entry compliant with our port international port capacity requirements, international health regulations, and then NCDs, old indicators, I mean this is a new indicator for NCDs, and that is to have media campaigns to create awareness of risk factors that contribute to NCDs. The other indicators are all indicators relating to the new guidelines for meal protein in the workplace and guidelines on nutrition for early childhood. It's just building on the work that I want to see those. The next one is also old indicators looking at labeling of tobacco products and reducing NCDs to the regulation of tobacco products. We're continuing our work to ultimately get the tobacco bill enacted. So the work is still going to continue. Then we have monitoring of salt content in food. Same as last year, we continue with the same work. Then another indicator, which is old, the establishment of the commission, which we hope to convene to cabinet for approval this year. And we hope to increase our number of district mental health teams compared to the past. We also have another new indicator here, and that is to expand the provision of rehab services with specific reference to the allied professionals, including physiotherapy, optometry, speech and hearing therapy, audiology, occupational therapy, and medical orthostop and prosthesis services. And this is really to have people available to see children that we see through our school health program, but also in general to widen access to these professionals. So to start this year, we will conduct a survey to determine the
Before the CFO comes, just to end on the last program, just to emphasize on the honorable members will be aware that we passed the act to establish the South African Health Product Regulatory Authority as a replacement of the Medicines Control Council. We just want to emphasize the fact that, as indicated, that this year the institution has been established in terms of the act. And we want to really, for this year, make sure that it becomes functional, so that we can speed up the approval of new medicine products. As members will remember, we still have a lot of backlog in terms of when new products come into the system. So once we have a CEO and a full management, a full complement of SAPRA, the process of approving medical products will be speeded up, so we aim to make sure that it is effective and indicated on the indicators in the future. We can get the CFO to go into the allocations.
Did you make it through the allocations and some of the salient points? The first one is our summary of the program, Jim, and what we've done is we've indicated the growth between the last financial year and the new financial year. So effectively we had a growth, total growth of 10.53% bottom line. But you can see it gradually decreases over the MPF to 9.4 and then to 7.97 in the out year. Although we've had some growth within programs, notably program 2 and 3, those were for specific earmarked funds and conditional grants. You'll see from the next slide, and we've had significant declines in compensation as well as in goods and services over the MPF period, and that has effectively affected our last three programs, 4, 5 and 6, and that would be the brunt of these reductions. So just to the point is that our compensation for employee budget was reduced on baseline from 9.7 for this year, 10.7 for next year, and 11.3 for the out year. And in the context of our budget, this is quite significant in terms of the number of positions that we can't fill, or that we have to see some attrition in our accounts. Our goods and services budget, and this includes any earmarked funds, has also been reduced by about 60 million over the period, 17 million, 19, 23 million. The chair, significantly, is that this comes on the back of reductions in the previous MTF period. If you look at the total that we've reduced by on baseline, it comes close to about 110 million over about a five year period. Within our capital assets, we reduced by 22 million, and it affects mostly our infrastructure grants. And when it comes to the provinces, you will see the effect on that. We've had some new components added as grants. We've got a new MINRE grant for an NHI. Indicated patient-based information system, as well as an electronic system, and the funds added is 166, 390, and 411 over the MTF period. We also had a drive to facilitate the approved fund financing of the Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital. We said 100 million, but in fact we've upped the 100 to about 150 million in the first financial year. Then 200 and 300 million in the out year. And that was part, and this allocation has comes as part of the National Tertiary Services Grant. Chair, the administration budget grew by 10.65%. Generally, it was to facilitate the increase in our leases, our Civitas building. We had to budget for that. That's the biggest increase. Program 2 has got a 31% increase. Although it seems huge, the two grants that I just mentioned, the stock surveillance and the information technology one, takes up the bulk of the increases. So you'll see this is why there seems to be huge increases percentage-wise in two of the sub-programs. Those were an additional condition grants that were added to our budgets. Program 3 grows by 14%. Although there's been increase in HIV/AIDS because of the universal test and treat campaign, there was also a real reduction in the baseline allocation that goes to provinces. So on one hand we received funds for programs, but on the other hand baseline funds were decreased over the period. Program 4, as I said, program 4, 5 and 6 took most of the brunt of the reduction in goods and services. You can see a very small growth of about 2.5%. To some extent, we've tried to increase it throughout the year, but mainly because we also have a conditional grant that relates to agri clinics that has shown some growth in the 17-18 and 18-19 financial year. Although the percentages seem huge, the amount is not that big. 7.84 for Program 5. The biggest loser in this case was our infrastructure grant, which was reduced over the NCF period. And Program 6, about a 2.18% growth. We also see here in this case some of the funds that were earmarked as the DMCF or SAPRA will now be a transfer payment and it will be treated as an entity, so they won't form part of the base budget of that program, especially when it comes to compensation for facilities. We've shown you just as a matter of interest our spending trend over the last few financial years. And we've increased our expenditure to about 99.7%. So this is just looking in terms of expenditure, our best performing expenditure year, if you like, was this last financial year. Although it's still unaudited, this is our preliminary numbers as it stands. And you'll see a significant increase has come in our ability to spend on our inherent grant, especially the GP contracting, together with the infrastructure grants. And if you look at the next slide, it proves the point. And you'll see that, for instance, if you look at our contracting grant, our spending pace was extremely low in 2013-14, and gradually as our systems became implementable and improved, that the expenditure has gone up quite significantly, as is the case with our indirect grant on the infrastructure. From 182 million in 2013-14, been close to 690 million in the last financial year. Chair, the conditional grants, I think this is probably what the committee also would like to look at, especially with relates to provinces. So our total budget is 37.5 billion. This is transfer payments from our budget into provinces, increased from the 33.8 billion in the previous financial year. There was an increase in HIV and AIDS for about 2 million for the male medical procedure and universal test and treat. And we also had the percentage increase, as I explained, on the Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital allocation under the NDG. Just to give you an idea of a pie chart on where most of our funds go, they still go back to comprehensive HIV, AIDS and TB grants, our biggest. All of our tertiary service grant, DVI grant, and then our health professional training development grant. Just to break it down, so the grants that are distributed to provinces are these four grants as it stands. The training grant, it was increased by 6% from last financial year. Tertiary service grant by 8%, but this includes the Nelson Mandela Hospital. The HIV grant 13%, and although significant just because of the additional funds on the universal debt increase. We've actually lost funds on baseline, and the rebate grant about 7%. The distribution by provinces, you can see, Chair, with the training grant, especially the training grant and the tertiary services grant, those are two grants that are supplementary to the equitable share of provinces. And at national, we try to keep the system more or less consistent over the period. So you'll see most of the provinces are within the 6% range, Northern Cape slightly down to 5%, and Northwest at 7% increase. Basically, the grants are there to support provinces to fund services costs associated with clinical training and supervision of health science trainees on the public service platform. And Chair, I think that Dan has mentioned, or there was mention made of the Cuban students that will be returning within the next 2 or 4 years. They will significantly, well, even next year. So Chair, we have to make a case together with higher education on looking at ways of increasing this grant significantly. As students come onto the platform. The services grant, again, mainly consistent percentage increases over the period. The 10% in Gauteng is the result of the additional allocation to the Nelson Mandela Hospital. We've already distributed 100 million during April to the hospital, and another 50 will flow towards the end of June, as we assess the performance in the first quarter. So, yeah, the Services grant is 8% increase, mostly to do with the provision of tertiary health services, and also to compensate tertiary services for additional costs associated with these services. There's also an issue, Chair, of we call it, some provinces being able to supply services that the other provinces can't supply. So you'll find that Gauteng, for instance, has got a big influx that will impose to some extent, and even the rest. And a frustration on the allocation. The HIV and TB grant, again, mostly consistent over the period. Eastern Cape has got a small increase, or a big increase of 16%, together with the Northern Cape. So the grant focuses mainly on HIV and counseling. The TB cases, the finding, screening, and diagnosis, as Dan explained, the antiretroviral treatments, the prevention of TB, prevention of mother child transmissions, and then medical male interventions. The rebate grant seems to be a bit more of a mixed bag in terms of allocations, and it's so for a number of reasons. You will see that the two biggest bullet losers, in this case, Northern Cape and Western Cape, both provinces had difficulty with their implementing agents in terms of being able to spend the funds in this financial year, especially the Western Cape. Northern Cape has got one big project with America after the mental hospital that will come to an end this financial year, but they've got very few other projects that are at the stage of tendering. And Popo at 34% seems big, but we have to consider that I think in the 15-16 financial year they had very slow growth in that year. Because of their plans not being able to substantiate any progress. This is, kind of been addressed in the meantime, and the growth or the amount now is more or less in line with the 15-16 MTF amount was projected at. The Chair, 7% increase total. Although it's increased, just keep in mind that it's basically a still baseline reduction in terms of monetary value of about 220 million. The grant will focus on acceleration of construction and maintenance. And just the last point there, Chair, is that we've moved the focus of the grant to concentrate more on maintenance than new projects. The provinces are encouraged to move quite a bit of this fund into existing services or into current expenditure to be able to deal with the maintenance part of their plans, and DG has made it clear in many instances that they won't consider any new major but it will definitely allow for maintenance. And the framework of the grant also has been established such that this 50% has to be spent on maintenance. On the indirect grants, Chair, these are grants that we spend on behalf of provinces, if you like. The energy components, we've got a CCMDD, which is the distribution, direct distribution of pharmaceuticals. You can see we've made a significant investment in this project. Although we've had donor funds up to now, we have increased it for two reasons. Finance the uptake, as well as take over some of the financing agreements with our donors. Contracting essentially is the same amount, about 208 million from 210. We will keep the current base more or less consistent. And a capitation model at those money. The revised components, we think that we've got our planning in place. We've got momentum on this. And we're sitting at 948 million, 19% increase. But we've also taken a view that if it comes to adjustment stage and provinces show expenditure, that we're able to move this expenditure back to provinces that need additional funds on the required. So these funds are not carved in stone. We'll definitely take a view on it and report them. The other living component, it's a small amount, 20 million increase, but about 200%. And it's just to make sure that there's peer review being done. And also in cases where provinces need equipment and we can use the transversal contracts for pledging, we would like to purchase small kind of equipment on the ground. SPV component is still stable at 200 million. And this grant, I think, is the last year as well. So this year is the last year that we've got this grant. Next year, the grant will fall away. And the intention is that Treasury would then send this back to provinces as part of the equitable share. I'm sure that the minister will still take a view on this. But this is as it stands at the moment. Chair, that briefly is just a financial overview. Thanks, Chair.
Quite a lot of room for improvement, very positive indicators in terms of overall improvement of the quality of life, a number of indicators which shows that there is improvement in the system, but we are quite aware of the fact that going forward is more difficult, because it's one thing to move where a lot of intervention had to be made, especially on your huge costs of mortality and morbidity, which really major infections in terms of HIV/AIDS, TB, and then in terms of the treatment layout, which has moved. Here, if you look at the ARV rollout from 1.5 million to just over under 4 million. Now, that alone puts a lot of pressure on the system because all these recipients of treatment do that at the health facilities. Now, just taking that into consideration. When you have an overall pressure on the fiscus, and which says that, as the CFO has mentioned, a major area of instruction to reduce spending has been on compensation on the salaries. Now, services, but reduce, you know, the funds for salaries. You know, so essentially, therefore, working with the provinces, our major focus has been to say, where are the areas where we can improve efficiency and reduce the need for more people to visit the facilities. And that's why, for instance, the chronic, the CCMD, the chronic medication distribution, we're looking at that, you know, very focused way to say where chronic, so if we're looking at HIV as a chronic illness, together with diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, respiratory, you know, diseases, asthma. So we saw that we are saying therefore patients who are stable in terms of all the measurements on HIV, on antiretrovirals, with low CD, the low viral, the low, the high CD4, stable health benefits, for at least a period of 6 months, collect the medication elsewhere, improve, increased sites, whether it's in terms of GP rooms, pharmacies, where we enter agreements for distribution of medicine, so that, and we're saying even that in some of the rural areas where such services may not be there, community halls, tribal offices, whatever, put in some monitoring of quality, just to make sure that the medicines are kept in a safe place and is proper monitoring. But for that period, but also where possible, instead of a person who's stable getting 1 month treatment, we can give 2 months, we can even give 3 months because they are very stable, so that they don't return every month. You decongest your system so that you can then be able to absorb more and more people. So those kind of, you know, innovations, the area of improving efficiency in terms of health patient registration system, the e-health, making sure that when it would take, I mean, many of our clinics are congested just on filing. Just a lot of people get frustrated waiting for a file, arriving at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they probably, you know, just to be on the front queue so that they can get a file and then be seen by the nursing sister, if necessary by Dr. Link. So by improving efficiency just on the record system, you know, electronic system where with the identification number using your ID, it can be through the press of a button and all your records can be released. And even if you go, once more people are captured on the system, even if you are attending at Soweto clinic, but you find yourself in Ekurhuleni, as long as your identifier can be, your number can be punched, your records can be retrieved in terms of what you last got in Soweto clinic or in Polokwane, even if you are in the Eastern Cape. So those are the kind of systems, you know, to try and compensate, to improve efficiency. Hopefully that will also help us as we face financial pressure, because on the one hand, there is pressure to increase services and access and quality, but with less finances. So those are really the kind of challenges which we are, you know, dealing with, and all those kind of interventions which we are trying to mitigate the challenges. Thanks.
Hello, thank you. Deputy Minister and all the presentations that we have been given. We really do welcome them and appreciate. It's time for the members to engage on the presentations by way of questions and comments. Over to you, honorable members. Honorable
thank you, Chair. The Deputy Minister referred to the backlog on medicine registrations. Now, I understand that the new system coming to place, there will be a new council, but I still don't understand why we have this ever appearing to be ever increasing backlog of critical medicines that cannot be registered by the Medicine Control Council in the period. They should be 100% functional. I understand that there's a question of ring fencing of money, where money applications now are being paid and it goes into the national fiscus. It's not ring fenced for specifically that, but this has been going on for years, and I can't understand that critical medication cannot be registered, specifically when we look at also generics. Then, looking at infrastructure and proper planning, we had the opportunity to visit the Kopanong municipality in the Free State recently, and that is an area where between two censuses, recent census, the last two censuses, the population declined by 25% approximately. Yet, a hospital was now built there, and apparently after more than 4 years, it will now partially be opened very soon. But we have a situation that even the clinics in that area cannot find sufficient staff, nurses, clinics and mobile clinics to operate properly. So I would just like to know what is behind this is, and I understand it was, we were told that there were in fact three studies done, all indicating that a hospital should not be built there, yet the hospital was built at Kongsberg. What is the rationale behind this, where it appears that this is actually going to be just actually an assembly point to Bloemfontein? There appears at this stage no intention to fully use the substantial capacity that's available in that hospital. Also that there have already been nurses employed sit at home for more than 6 months while clinics do not have staff. I just would like to know, is there a control from the National Department of Health on this? Should we regard the information given to us by the people there on the ground in presentations as questionable? That is planning in general, because we talk about substantial amount of money. I think that the entity will exceed, although it's 4 years later, the information will exceed half a billion. Then just going back to the Deputy Minister mentioned the number of 800, I think, Cuban qualified doctors coming into the country. Just would like to know, what will their status be? Will they only be allowed to practice in hospitals? Do they still have to go undergo further training? If so, what? That's all.
Thank you, Chair. My question is a question. It's also a comment. And I'm hoping also to be educated on this issue. Viewing at what we went through the past few months ago in regards to the health, mentally ill people that we lost, I was hoping that the health department in their annual performance plan, they will have a special indicator that will concentrate mainly on improving our mental health challenges that we faced in this country. I don't know if I am correct by saying that mental health could also be viewed as one of the non-communicable diseases. And I was hoping that we would be able to come up with a plan on analyzing the social burden and just to deal with the biosocial factors that contribute to the burden of the mental health in our country, and looking at trying to close the gap of the inequality that we're experiencing in our health system in regards to the mental challenged people, and just trying to reduce the burden that they are facing in terms of their health and wellness and their families as well. So I don't know if I'm correct by saying it can be viewed as a non-communicable disease, and it should also have a special indicator that deals mainly with mental health. So I'd like to be, as you answer me, also educate me on that as well, that am I correct in saying that, and what can the Department of Health do to help in this issue? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, the Honourable Minister and the Health Department. The issue of NHI for me remains one of the focus areas, because the department has been reporting to us ever since we came here in 2014, Chairperson, piloting this program. Now, I wanted to find out what was in the original plan in terms of the time frames for the pilot, because the pilot was in, if I'm not mistaken, 10 districts. So there were two in KZN and one in the rest of the other provinces, one each, with KZN getting, of course, the lion's share. Now, I'm looking at the figures here of what is going to be spent. That's why I'm asking the question of what was the original template? Are we on target in respect of the implementation as per the original template? Well, I'm looking at the figures of the countrywide spread now of the implementation, and they are not convincing, Honorable Deputy Minister. When you look at what was spent when the country was piloting on only 10 districts, and you look at what is going to be spent full scale going forward, that is why I'm saying maybe it will help if one can get a picture of the report of what has been done so far and what are the phases going forward, so that one can look at these figures and see if what you are saying is exactly in line with what has been put in terms of friends and cents. That is my one question, Chase. It's the only question. The other one is a comment to say, see, with the Department of, both the Department of Health, Chair, and the Department of Education, Basic Education, we are a little bit disadvantaged when we engage them, in that these two departments nationally, they are responsible mostly for planning and not for executing. And the provinces are executing. And as a result, when you engage them, we engage them on issues of execution, which is what the provinces are doing. Now, there is this gap. You know, the Minister of Basic Education once raised this with us in the House when we were talking about issues of implementation. And she said, no, but I'm not responsible for that. But I'm listening at the department, and I am visualizing what is happening on the ground. I've raised this with the minister several times before to say, Minister, what you are saying is not what is happening. But now the minister is not responsible. The MECs are responsible. So I don't know how we close this gap, Chair, when we engage, so that we are really hands-on officials in respect of theory and implementation on the ground for each of our business issues. I just wanted to raise that comment because I can see even today I still have the same concern, but I know what the response is going to be.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues in welcoming the presentation. Chairperson, I don't know the name of the presenter, but in your presentation you have mentioned three hospital boards which will be appointed in this financial year. What will happen to other hospitals, or because of the financial constraints? Also, check on the department update the committee on the school health program. Is it rolled out in all provinces? If so, are all the services available in each of the provinces? The last question, Chair, is on the can the department update the committee on the progress made with the contracting of the general practitioners? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Let me also join honourable members to welcome the presentation by the president. My question, Chairperson, is based on the oversight visit in the Free State Deputy Minister. 2 weeks ago, we go to Free State in Harib region. Municipality is Lusinga. Deputy Minister, we managed to attend all 4 or 6 clinics within 3 days. I was shocked. I was working together with the chairperson in that area of Lusinga. As we hear, when I announced myself, I said I was coming from the Free State province. Visiting the clinic, Deputy Minister, we find around 6 or 4, one of the clinics is the one that is using high blood machine. All the clinics, there is no high blood machine in that one or two. When we ask the question, the machine is ordered, going to deliver after 2 months, 3 months, there is no proper answer. But I managed also to raise the issue of the MEC and the chairperson of the portfolio committee about the situation of this clinics that I find in Lusinga. You go also, Deputy Minister, to the farmers in the clinic. Because normally when you do oversight, you go to extend to check the expiry date of the medication. But if you check expiry date of the medication, you find there is no expiry medication. But that pharmacy don't have the aircon, most of them. There's no aircon in that clinic. Also, Chairperson, I check page 55, you talk about the budget of HIV and AIDS and blah, blah, blah. Where I'm coming, Deputy Minister, I'm coming from the rural area. I'm the member from rural area. We've got only one clinic in that area, is even Bilungwati. It's between Kronstadt and Heilbron in Sedibedabi region. We've got only clinic in that area. There's no doctor, there's nothing. That clinic open at 7 o'clock until 4 o'clock. If you are sick after 4, it's your baby to nurse. Because you know also you've got this challenge of delay of the ambulance. Last week I was on sick leave, then I managed to go to the clinic around my area. In that clinic, Deputy Minister, there is no medication of ARV, HIV and AIDS. There is no medication in that clinic. People send to Bloemfontein. That means the people from that area, he or she is supposed to travel 280 kilometers. Just to go and collect a medication of EIRV. If maybe we can follow up, Deputy Minister, about the issue that I raised
But also I talk to the MEC and the chairperson, including myself, because it's our job to make sure that our people have a better health. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Member, for the comments and the and inquiries that you've made. I also have a few questions. Honorable Deputy Minister and your team. One is the issue of the rollout of the ARPS. We are saying that as a department, we'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard you say that we're increasing the number of people that are able to access the ARPS. Now my question is, what is the basis of the increase? The basis of the increase is the awareness that people must go and get ARVs. Is it because they are going out to test for their ARVs? Or is it because we are using the battery to reduce the infection rate? Or what is the basis of this? Are we winning the battle to fight against HIV? My second question is with regards to the medication that is given to different health centers, be it clinics or hospitals. We're worried about the rate of theft of medication. And I want to know what the department is planning to do to curb the rate at which medication is stolen in those centers, because it is at the detriment and it is compromising our own patients who will go there and not get proper medication because there are syndicates that are involved in stealing medication. What are your plans to get them? I don't know what I will come across a report that explains the outcomes of the assessment of the NHI pilot. But we are planning to increase the size where we are contributing from them. What informs the increase if we have not seen the reports that assesses what the challenges were and what is it that we have achieved and what is it that we need to improve on in order to succeed. Some of the medications or goods would be centralized if I'm not mistaken. Central procurement is there to make them, and then distribution to help centers. Has it been able to accrue savings from central procurement? And if you have, what are the savings and to what amount or to what extent have you been able to accrue savings? Because as we said earlier on tonight, we need to stretch the insurance that we have to reach many more people out there. You said the mouthful, when you said the rolling out of quality health services is not only dependent on health, but it is dependent also upon many social determinants that involve other departments. In other words, the campaigns that the department is running, it could be for TB, HIV, whatever, needs a collaborative effort with other departments. The extent to which they are coming on board and assisting, one would like to get a picture as to, are you succeeding in roping them in? Are they making a valuable contribution? Because health issues are societal, and they're not only with the Department of Health. I might have missed it when you gave us your financial, your budget, the amount of money that will inject in order to roll out ideal clinics. I might have missed this. There are many more questions, but at least where we are headed to as a department. I will then hand over. Or the testing of blood by the roadside. Do we have a budget? Do we have staff enough to do this? I'm worried about the cutting the baseline or the compensation of employees against what we say the end, expecting 800 Cuban doctors to come as from next year. I'm not able to figure out how we are going to deal with that kind of situation. 800 doctors are coming in, cutting on the baseline for compensation of employees. How are we going to balance this? How are we going to find the balance in there? And also, the situation down there, as honorable members are saying, is not working on paper in some of these things. In the clinics that we visited in the system, we will find that a doctor is available once a month. Doctors are not available. And I the DM, another issue that I wish to raise in your presence, please look at the conduct survey. I don't know how we're going to do it. Doctors that come from other countries, I'm not being xenophobic. They secure employment in South Africa. They abdicate their responsibilities in the public hospitals. They go and moonlight. And they compromise the patients in the public hospitals. There has to be an investigation. There's something wrong. Please devise some kind of investigation as you go into the register of the private hospital and look who signs in and where are they? Because there are complaints, DM, that they're not found. They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing in clinics and in public hospitals. They are busy drawing money in private hospitals, not like today. There has to be an investigation. I've done my duty as a public representative because I got a direct complaint from one of the doctors in a hospital close to me. That Sisiba Besoza, people are not working, they're not prepared to work. They've been given work. Well, we've got doctors that are qualified within the country, but we have said that those that have got special care can be absorbed. But they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and I think the department needs to act precisely.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members for the questions and comments. I'll take on those which I can, and then I'll ask the team also to respond to some of the questions. In terms of the backlog in registration of medicines, as we've said, that part of the problem is let me just say, for one, there is no argument about the necessity for safety and quality of whatever medication is authorized into the country to be used by the public. Now, the outcry is because as technology keeps improving, you know, and also with the patents and companies are helping us in terms of producing more generics, the difficulty is when the costs are high, and as the generics are being produced at cheaper price, there's a backlog in terms of approval. So that, on the one hand, appreciating the need for quality, but on the other, you know, the frustration in terms of, now part of the frustration really, a major part of that is that in terms of the way the medicines control culture is structured, amongst other things that for the teams which must do this assessment, most of the work is done on a part-time basis. These are highly qualified people, but who are brought into the MCC with their skills and qualifications, but you know, they meet certain times only to come and assess, you know, given the, because the documents on each product, quite substantive documents which must be analyzed. Now, when you have part-time people, one of the things which surprised children is, and also that, so in terms of that, where we're moving now is to have this as a public entity, which has, amongst other things, therefore will be able to employ more qualified people on a full-time basis, have them full-time in terms of doing this work of analyzing and approving the products, but also not fully depending on the allocation from the fiscal budget. But there's some allocation, especially in the beginning, but the expectation is that progressively, because when companies apply for their products to be analyzed, they also pay fees. So in terms of the new act, those fees will not totally go into the revenue fund, but there will be retention of some of the fees so that there is more financial capacity in SAPRA to can, you know, contract and even employ more specialists in terms of scientists who will be doing the analysis. So that's why we're saying that the target is that we must really get it out of the blocks, out of the running blocks this year, get a full-time CEO, start to allocate some funding, because it will only build its own capacity financially going forward. But for now, as a department, we're still doing the allocation. So hopefully we're going to be monitoring this to make sure that we can gather the pace, because it's only in our interest that more products are available, especially generics, which will be affordable and therefore be able to make sure that more people can access. The issue of the Free State and the Thomsberg Hospital is a matter which you know, we have discussed with the province, and the two honorable members have spoken about this issue, in fact, three. The matter of fact, honorable members, as you know, you are lawmakers, you know how our constitution, you know, is structured, that health is a concurrent function, and the national is largely more of norms and standards, policies and legislation for the country. But the details of what facility is put where, and the package of services in that facility, it's really a provincial competence, which we can advise, comment, and you know, I mean, it's been quite a difficult matter, this one. But you know, so it's really you know, we depend on cooperative governance in terms of this, in terms of working with our colleagues, the MECs, and try and nudge each other to say, look, these are the resources available, please look at this matter, prioritize in this direction, these are the national priorities, and so on. And it's, you know, so that's as far as we can go. But we do get largely, I mean, to a large extent, good cooperation. But it's you know, we don't have the authority to can say, don't put up this facility. We can advise in terms of norms, to say, you know, these are the norms. And so we are in communication with the province in terms of, once a facility like this are there, what are the best ways to can make sure. And we will also be taking up the matter with the province, because, it's just to make sure that the facilities which are there are properly staffed and provide the kind of service. Maybe while still there, also, it's not acceptable in a situation where you've got the only health facility, especially in your rural areas, because, you know, we always advise that communities should not have to travel long distances to acquire health services. And if it's the only facility, there must be really good reasons why it's not 24 hours. And also for such a facility also not to have basic medications such as your antiretrovirals, it defeats the purpose. So it's a matter which we are happy that the honourable member has taken up with the MEC, but we will also be making a follow up in that regard. the question of the I'll deal with this matter together with the honourable chair as well, the quality of Cuban training program. The plus minus 800 people who will be coming back to South Africa in July, August next year are the final year students, medical students, not yet qualified. So they will be coming, the program is such that the students who study in Cuba do their academic training, 5 years of academic training, from first year to fifth year of academic training, of course with an exposure to some clinical practice. And then they write the final, the fifth year exam, which is the written exam in their universities in Cuba. And then in the same way as we have in our program, in the medical schools here, after your fifth year of study, you then get into full-time clinical training in the final year before you then get assessed final exam now if you pass you become an intern now. So even the students who are in Cuba, same thing, when they finish their fifth year, instead of doing the clinical final in Cuba, they come into South Africa to do their final clinical training in South African medical schools to get accustomed to this profile. I mean, there is no HIV in Cuba, there is no TB, there are no motor vehicle, no, very minimum injuries of stab wounds, gunshots. So the students who have trained there may spend a lot of time not having seen somebody with a broken, with a stab wound, with a lightly fine stab wound. So I'm just giving it as an example, but also in other areas like delivering babies, because of the level of development, I mean, the doctor to patient kind of ratios, the fact that every family has a doctor, and so on. And so the delivering of a baby is the job of a specialist in Cuba. So by the time you do your internship, you will not have delivered a baby if you do it then. Whereas in South Africa, the moment you get into a hospital, into a clinic, there will be a pregnant woman who will be delivering. Mm-hmm. And if a doctor say runs away, there will be a big scandal because he's never been able to deliver. So they come here for that final year to get into the kind of practice here. And then after that, they get assessed with the final year of training in South Africa, clinical assessment. And then after that, they then write the final year of the Cuban university, because the certificate must be that of that Cuban university. So these are the students. It's not been a major issue thus far, because you would have 60 coming every year, 70 coming for the final year. So there will be 10 at UCT, 15 in Natal, 6 in Limpopo, and all in all 60 to 70. Now when you have 800, it means instead of 10, you have 100. At Fakumaha too, and so on and so on. So that's a major undertaking which we are working with all the provinces and all the medical schools. We meet regularly, I've had a number of meetings with the deans of medical schools discussing details with the provincial heads of departments, MECs, and we're now visiting each province, working now on the details of the facilities through which this final training will be done. Now, once that is done, let's take even currently, we have I'll give you an example, in July this year, there will be about 52, 53, the number, who have finished this program. We'll be having a graduation. Last year we had a graduation at the previous year here in Cape Town. This year we're having it at Durban, at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. Graduation where the Cuban rectors, the head of the problem will come and do the graduation. Those who are going through that graduation, they finished the clinical training here in South Africa, they passed it, they have written the written examination from the Cuban university, they have passed that, they now go into the internship pool. We must absorb them now into internship. And they are same as the locally trained students. They've gone through the clinical orientation and been assessed. So when they pass, when they get registered as interns like any other South African trained student. When they finish their internship, they get registered as medical officers who must then go into community service. And when they finish their community service, they're fully registered with the Health Professions Council. If they want to stay in the public service, especially because they were in bursaries, many of them will have the obligation because of their bursaries to stay in the public system. But if there's agreement with the provinces which sponsor them for them to specialize, they can go and specialize. And those who, having done their duties in terms of their bursaries, will want to pursue private practice after they've fulfilled all their requirements, they will be fully registered because they've gone through full integration into the training. So that's really just in terms of facts of how the system functions. Improvement in mental health. Indeed, mental health is considered as part of the non-communicable diseases. It's part of the burden of disease of non-communicable diseases. Indeed, we are aware, Honorable Ngwenya, that the issue of that we have reflected on improving district health, district mental health teams, where in each district, as similarly as we putting up clinical teams looking at the key clinical priorities like your maternal health, your child health, pediatricians and obstetricians being put in the district teams. We are also pursuing to make sure that over and above the overall clinical teams, we must also strengthen mental health teams. But the reality is that the availability of psychiatrists and psychologists, clinical psychologists and so on, to lead those teams is very limited in the country. For some reason, I think because it's not lucrative in terms of in the private sector. Remember, South African health system over the last 20 years or so, or even before, is highly driven by markets now. So you will find the specialists who are in abundance will be your surgeons, obstetrics and gynecs also have been quite a lot. Now they are threatened by litigation. The numbers are going down because of litigation. Very few people are specializing in obstetrics in maternal health because of the litigation. But generally, in terms of the market demand, it's been one of those pediatricians also. So psychiatry has not been a very lucrative specialty. So the numbers really were very struggling in terms of getting enough psychiatrists other mental health specialists, clinical psychologists, and so on. So you will see that I also raised it with the team as we were preparing the presentation, that our aspirations are very low. Our ambitions in terms of making sure every one of the 52 districts has a mental health team, the numbers were, the ambition were quite slow, almost like 10 or 5 a year to increase. But the team was explaining that the problem is finding the specialists in the rural districts especially. So it's a matter which we accept, honorable member, that we must do more, learning from that experience. So we will be looking at other ways in which we can do this. I'm going to just one of the team members, maybe just to talk about the the issue of pilots, the NHI pilots, in terms of I think Dr. Gail Andrews can just remind us in terms of the time. target time frames, phase one, phase two, phase three, where are we, and in terms of the current pilots. In terms of funding, as I didn't know, the caller is out, the allocation which is in this budget is to complete the piloting and finalize that from that work in terms of infrastructure, in terms of IT, in terms of GP contracting, in terms of human resource, and so on. The final actual rollout of, you know, once the white paper as revised is approved by cabinet, once the NHI bill is passed into an act, amongst other things, will be to establish an NHI fund. That's part of what is in the revised paper, in the final paper now, to looking at how to actualize the fund, the actual fund. What are the possible sources? So the funds which are in the fiscals now are not envisaged as being the funds which will be able to roll out. To roll out fully in the country, you will require additional sources of funding, which is what has been also in discussion in the National Treasury. Honourable members may be aware, there are a lot of permutations in terms of where some of the funds can come from. And I think when we have more time, not just on the NHI white paper, we can go more into detail. But just to emphasize that it is not expected that the current allocation to the health budget will be the one to fully implement the NHI, but is to find other sources of funding to complement what is already in the budget. School health, Jürgen will speak to that, contracting of GPs as well. Dr. Gail Andrews will speak to that, but I think the point there was on central hospitals. It was in terms of improving governance and putting structures at central and tertiary hospitals. Otherwise, it's normal practice that all our hospitals are expected, you know, under the auspices of their MECs, to establish boards, hospital boards, all of them. And all that we're also looking at is how to improve the capacity to make sure that there's proper governance. Things don't just go so wrong that, you know, members of the public don't know where to go when they get frustrated. This hospital board must be more well known so that members of the public can also approach them. But also give enough kind of authority so that they also feel confident to can intervene when there's management inefficiencies in our hospitals. So I think the point there was really more in terms of more functions and more authority, delegation of more authority in terms of the boards, so that they especially in our central hospitals, where the aim is to make them a lot more autonomous, a lot more have more authority, not to depend on the MEC and the minister and so on. So it was within that context. Again, I think I've spoken a bit about the Free State. It's really shocking if a clinic would run short of just a BP machine. You know, so that's really totally unacceptable. So it's a matter which, I mean, you know, it defeats the purpose if we're going to be, you know, looking at a lot more services, and even, you know, even if you can have an advanced IT system to register the patients, but their blood pressures can't be measured. I mean, it just defeats the purpose. That's very basic. So. You know, I think the shortfall here is that there is a lot which has been done, and I think the colleagues here, as when we go back, we must look at that. We're doing a lot in terms of monitoring drug stockouts, the IT systems which are being used to scan the pharmaceuticals there, and stock visibility, which can report, which reports also to the provincial and national office. So there's a lot of advancement in terms of monitoring stock of medication in the clinics and hospitals using all these IT systems, all or even with them, it depends on compliance. If somebody doesn't scan the barcodes on the medicines, you won't be able to see what is the stock level. So it still requires that. But at least there's some progress in terms of that. But equipment-wise, we still don't have a national system of monitoring basic equipment. I mean, we have norms and standards to say a basic clinic. I mean, the ideal clinic ranks from the very, very basic to what, for you to be called an ideal clinic, is what you need to have. But we don't have as yet, you know, a monitoring system of this very basic equipment. You know, you should be able to, you know, measure urine sugar and, you know, possibly also blood sugar. Should be able to measure blood pressure, temperature. There are those kind of basic clinical data which you should be able to take, measure somebody's height and weight. I mean, if a clinic doesn't have a scale, just to measure weight and to measure the height, I mean, just amongst other things, to measure weight of babies. How are you going to do a baby clinic if you can't even take the weight to see what, you know? There are those kind of basic things which I think as we deal with pharmaceuticals, we need to also look at whether there are other ways in which there can be some best eye view of regularly being able to assess availability of just basic equipment in our clinic. So thanks the honorable in terms of that. We will make a follow-up with the MEC. And also, as I say, rather than be anecdotal, in our National Health Council meetings, we need to provide some kind of guidelines in terms of how then to monitor some of these things so that it should not be by accidental finding. Honourable Member of Parliament visiting an area, we should be able to have a sense on a weekly and monthly basis as to what is happening. The issue, Honourable Chair, in terms of the ARV increased rollout, you're quite spot on, and the answer to your question is both. One is increased awareness, more people feeling much more comfortable to go for testing, and also to, you know, accept the status. Many more people are open going to the clinics. I mean, sometimes when you go into the facilities, you think maybe it's a deterrent when people know that people who are on that site are for ARV. Mm-hmm. But people have come, you know, have made such a turnaround that many more people now, you know, it's like any chronic illness. Because they are living healthy lives. So there's still some stigma, but it's much reduced. So awareness and de-stigmatization is improved. But similarly, the reality also is that reduction in terms of new infections, it's not doing well. We're still having many more. I think Jorgen will speak when he comes in a little bit about some. To just share some figures, but you know, especially as you know, programs like She Conquers, focusing on young women, because the new infections, especially amongst young women, it's really, you know, worrying. It's just too much. So we're not winning the battle in that area. There's some reduction, but not. And we accept the fact that the long-term, you know, target is to deal with reduction to zero of new infections, because that's the only way in which future generations will then be HIV-free. Rather than, we can do something in terms of viral suppression through treatment, test and treat to suppress the virus and so on, but if there's still very many new infections, then we're not really winning. The theft of medicines is also a major issue, but we hope also that with the stock visibility systems, that if there's high levels of theft, hopefully we will be able to pick that up. It's really work in progress. Again, if you can see the issue of the pilots, where are we? Do we have a report? What is the plan in terms of maybe you can deal with that? Ian, you can deal with the issue of procurement. Are we making saving? Central procurement, what does it mean? And I think I'm sure you can deal with that. You deal funding. The blood alcohol testing, there was roadside, there was an envisaged rollout of that. But that is quite a very costly kind of intervention. So there was a decision to say let's delay, because this was at the time when there had been court challenges about the breathalyzer. But apparently currently there is also some review which has been done in the Western Cape on a new form of breathalyzer which looks like may meet legal requirements and do away with these challenges in terms of the validity of. So the idea was, let's look at this one, look at the reinforcing, because it's a much more affordable way rather than the blood. The last point, Chair, which you raised, is a major problem for us. Our doctors who are in fully employment but working, it's not only the foreign doctors, but it's also our own specialists. Huge problem. I mean, that one is where people are doing what you call remunerated work outside of the public service, called in short RWAPs. It's a negotiated thing which was accepted, but with particular monitoring and regulation. But the reality is that in many of our, even in our medical schools, many of our students are not getting even adequate teaching, because you find even amongst heads of departments spending very little time, not only in terms of clinical work, but also teaching, and spending a lot of time in the private hospitals, spending time which they are paid for. So it differs from area to area. Where there is good supervision of the hospital managers, CEOs, and the province has put systems, you find that this is minimized. But once there is a laxity, and then of course, from time to time, we get threatened. There's been times when MECs and HODs have intervened, and because of scarce skills, then the specialists then say, look, if you don't want us to do the outside work, then we're leaving, you know. And in some cases, when we put our foot down with our colleagues in the provinces and CEOs, some have left. But sometimes you really come to the conclusion to say, it's better to know that we don't have this person with this skill, because on paper, we have this person, but they're hardly there. They're earning the salary. And I can tell you, with the occupation-specific dispensation, the OSD, heads of department and senior specialists, they earn far more than any one of us in this parliament. You know, some of them, with overtime, they earn more than the DG. Yes, because there is a basic salary and OSD, and then they are paid overtime. And so many of those hours, they are not even there. They are doing other work in the private hospitals. So it's an area which we've tried to improve. And you will see from time to time that the South African Medical Association will be up in arms, because we're trying to tighten up controls in that area. And then they complain to say, no, they are going to leave the public service. So as I say, sometimes you have to wait to say, look, is it worthwhile to spend so much of public funds and then not have the service, have the people on paper? So it's an area which we working with our colleagues in the provinces to try and stabilize. So that moonlighting is really a major challenge. I don't know who's going to start. Maybe we can start with Jürgen that side, and then Dr. Jürgen Pillay, and then CFO, and then Gay will pick up the areas which I haven't answered.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Good morning. Good afternoon already. I've been asked to respond to two areas, the Integrated School Health Program and the Antiretroviral a little bit on the GP. With respect to the Integrated School Health Program, Honorable Members, between 2012 and 2016, just looking at grades 1, 2, 3, 4, we have screened over 3.2 million young children. And of those, about 500,000 were found to have one or more what we call barriers to learning. And these include oral health problems, eyesight, speech, and hearing problems. about 15% of children on average who have these problems, and they then have been referred for further assessment and management. Bulk of those problems are oral health problems. About 337,000 are oral health problems. And that's largely around teeth being rotten, dental caries, which speaks to not only poor oral hygiene, but also eating lots of sugar and products with sugar. And that's why the sugar tax would be one good way of also helping these children, besides checking them for oral health problems. So that's on school health. So the school health program is growing. There are still areas where we don't have sufficient teams of nurses to go out and do the testing. And that's largely a result of lack of funding for the school health program, sufficient funding for the school health program. But we are working with provinces to ensure that at least the schools in the poorest areas are fully covered, because we know that those are the children that have the biggest challenges with respect to these barriers to learning. We are also integrating in terms of mental health screening, because we know that it's not just physical health that are barriers to learning, but also intellectual difficulties. With respect to general practitioners, in the pilot, 11 pilot districts, because KwaZulu-Natal has intended the third one, there were 342 general practitioners, GPs, appointed in these pilot districts. And what do? They do three things, essentially. One is that they see patients, and largely the chronic patients that the nurses can't deal with. Secondly, they audit files to look at the quality of care provided by the nurses. And thirdly, they mentor the nurses so that they give the nurses in-service training on the nurses. So we think that that's a really good way of improving the quality of care and availability of doctors in our clinics. With respect to HIV, the Deputy Minister is absolutely right that while we are improving the number of people on antiretrovirals, and I think just to remind the honourable members that we have an estimated 7 million people who are HIV positive in the country, of the 56 million South Africans. So the good news is that most South Africans are HIV negative, and we need to ensure they are kept negative. And part of that is to improve prevention. And there we are focusing on many of the things, as the Deputy Minister said, on the biomedical factors that prevent transmission. You know, condomizing, medical male circumcision, providing people with antiretrovirals, because that prevents transmission as well. But we also need to change people's attitudes towards sex, sexual relations, healing, sexual debut. You know, all of those things that are outside the Department of Health, and I think the honourable members mentioned the social determinants of health, and this is one area where clearly the social determinants play a big role. But the good news is that with the exception of the 20 to 35 year olds, we are seeing the younger people are prepared to delay sexual debut, use condoms, and the level of infection in young people is declining. The level of infection in infants is declining because of the mother-to-child transmission program. You know, without any antiretrovirals to prevent mother-to-child transmission, in 2004, we had 70,000 infants born HIV positive every year. Now, with the program we have less than 6,000 being born positive. And clearly, we wanted to be as close to zero as possible. And that's the intention. So we are making progress, but we would like to make steadier progress and faster progress. We have 3.8 million South Africans now on antiretrovirals, and this is the largest program in the world. It's a good thing on the one side. On the other side, we have such so many on treatment because we have such a large problem. And clearly, we need to ensure that we decrease the number of new infections. Thank you, dear. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think the issues on the CCMDD thing. And I'm not sure if there's been a specific research done on what costs are not that, but I think we do see efficiency gains in terms of waiting times coming down and the need for patients going into a clinic and so on. So I think there's definitely efficiency gains. Probably we'll go back and see if we can quantify those efficiency gains properly. The other question was just around the NHR, the idle clinic locations. Yes, the last financial year was 10 million rand. This current financial year will be 30 million, and then we ramp up to 50 million in the next financial year. They obviously will make a case for future funding in the 2021 financial year as well.
Just to add that it's not expected that the actual upgrading of the clinics will depend on that allocation. It's more in terms of monitoring, support, peer review to see how, you know, there's progress. Of course, as one of the colleagues have mentioned, we're also just looking at the possibility, where it's possible, in terms of where there can be some of this basic equipment which could be procured to support those clinics. But primarily, it's the core budget to take these clinics, not only in the pilot, in the NHI pilot, but even outside to IDN, is the responsibility of the equitable share of each one of the provinces in their allocation of primary health. We work with them in terms of those standards.
Of phase one, which was to strengthen
primary healthcare platform and the hospital platform service delivery through the various elements, including CCMDD, establishment of the office. However, we've gone beyond that to also start contacting GP providers. There were other elements from later phases which we already started, especially in the pilots, to implement. As I said, the contacting of provider health professionals as well as the population registration, which we started through the health patient registration system and the implementation of the e-health strategy to start the registration of patients, which will ultimately end in complete registry of patients and having all patients registered electronically on the system, which will become the NHI health information system. Now, in terms of how we've monitored the NHI pilots, if honourable members will remember, every year we've conducted an evaluation at the end of year one, end of year two, year three, year four, we've always conducted an assessment of the pilot for that year, for the previous year and the years prior to that. Now, right now, we are busy. We have just finalized the steps for a contract to go out, a call for proposals for service providers to bid to evaluate the entire phase one. But every year, when we've done assessments and we've seen what worked, we move to rapidly scale up those elements, even beyond phase one, beyond the pilots, like the CCMDD, the Ideal Clinic. It's gone beyond the pilot district already. And yeah, so we will be doing a full evaluation in depth, costing us 5 million of phase one, the report of which we will obviously table here. However, if there are members who feel they have not seen earlier versions of the report, these reports are all available on our website, the website of the National Department.
Thank you. And thanks to the team. Just to emphasize the fact that many of the lessons learned in the pilots were also then implemented beyond. Issue of the health patient registration, which really reduces the waiting time. We first focused on the pilot, but as we saw the impact, we then also said it must go beyond the pilot time. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you very much for the responses they have given that quite enlightening, and they are asking. But one would wish to say that much as health and many other functions are concurrent with the provinces, but we cannot run away from the fact that Dr. Mswaledi is the Minister for Health, and that is what people know. So the bus stops with national, which is unfortunate. People do understand that there are NDCs, but they look up to the national government when things go wrong. When they take to the streets, they do against national government in most of the instances. So that is why it is important. We'll always insist that much as you give the money as national government to them to carry out the function, the monitoring of what is happening down there is very, very important, because the back stops at the door of the national department. We do want to thank you as a committee for the good work that you are doing.
Mm-hmm.
You are rolling out quality health services, notwithstanding the challenges that you are observing. But in the main, and comparatively speaking, we've been to some African countries, you are rolling out quality health services. The mere fact that you have actually increased the life expectancy to a bigger percentage, you have dealt with the decreased infant mortality rate, you have reduced the mortality of children 5 years and under, you have reduced HIV and AIDS and all those things that you have achieved that were written in your presentation. You have increased the rollout of medication, and particularly you are hit about the fact that you are going to use all the depots, all the possible structures, institutions, to make it possible for people to access medication easily, not for them to go to a clinic if there's a tribal court here that can be used as a depot for them to collect medication at their doorstep. This is improvement. You are maximizing on efficiencies. So I do want to say that we really do appreciate, much as we probe the issues, but you are well aware that you are doing all, giving it all you can to ensure that we roll out quality health services. Those issues that are raised by the members as we pick them up during oversight, we report them, because we are all responsible. It's not us and them. We are all responsible for what's happening on the ground as members of parliament, but also as department. So I want to say thank you very much. We wish you all the best with the mega budget, which you have to stretch. And the issue at the end of doctors that are holding the government at ransom, I don't subscribe to it. We may as well remain with a situation where we know that you don't have a skilled doctor for A, B, C, and D, rather than allow them to exploit our mega resources and they don't render the service. They must decide which way they want to go. And we must build our own cohort of patriotic doctors within the country that are going to abide by the rules, the regulations, and offer the best service that they can, rather than give money to people who don't care about our community. It is disheartening. It really is disheartening. So we shall have to take brave decisions regarding some of the issues and face the consequences. But we know that eventually, if we know that we are doing what is right, we will reach them. God help us. Thank you. We can then release UGM. We are going to engage once more. There are a lot of issues, but we can't exhaust them in one meeting. But thank you very much. We will quite happy. Okay. Just to, as the department is leaving, now this is the report with regards to this engagement that you have had with the health department of the select committee there. The select committee on social services, having considered budget vote 16 and annual performance plan of 2018 of the Department of Health, reports that the committee has concluded its deliberations thereon. This is our report. Thank you. Thank you, honourable members. You don't have minutes to pass the meeting agenda. Thank you. We'll meet tomorrow for sports and recreation.
I'm going to go to the next one.
ba change the agendas. Na di fona go tshidi ba MEC e province nna. Di fona mo so sa go mpela ga e bile tsebeng di phaya.